Hutchison, Real 15. Now, one point we haven't talked about is the sort of reception you got
from the German civilians during your advance, and then when you reached Lübeck, what sort of reception you got from those that you met?
I think the answer is that they kept out of the way. We didn't occupy their houses, for instance, billets of the night. We leaguered in the open, or in a village, if you like, but not, we didn't go into the houses. And we saw very little or nothing of the of German civilians. Even until we reached Lübeck.
Now, what about German POWs? Because I believe you took a lot at Lübeck.
Well, yes. I mean, the war was in a state of disintegration then. As I said, the Russians were in a few miles the other side, and there was an accumulation of miscellaneous military in Lübeck, not only from the army, but from the Kriegsmarine and from the Luftwaffe, and a lot of staff officers and middle-aged to elderly Germans in uniform who were anxious at all costs not to be taken prisoner by the Russians. And I think the little job that I had that afternoon, when we were in on the west of the city, was to muster and try to direct these people. And it's difficult to estimate how many of them there were, but it was into the thousands, I think. A high proportion of them officers. There was the equivalent of a German NATO type place where we were. The Germans, you know, are very intent upon being correct, and they wanted to do the wrong thing. And I would say to them, why don't you go in there and see if you can't get a cup of tea? We are trying to arrange to get you up to an assembly area which had been set up somewhere outside the city to the west, where they eventually went. And we got a certain amount of transport. I don't think it was our transport. I think we commandeered buses, for goodness knows where they came from, in the city, to drive people up, and it obviously took time, and this was going on all that afternoon. The other thing so was the SS, who would always be identified by their insignia on their uniforms, must walk. Other people could lift if one could be found. But there are an enormous number of them, and it was a fairly chaotic situation. But I think, I don't know, I think eventually we got it out. I have an idea that we took somewhere in the region of 5,000 prisoners and sent out to this assembly area. Meanwhile, in the city, there were a tremendous number of people from occupied companies who'd were broken loose and were breaking into the liquor stores and getting drunk. There was a fair degree of chaos as the evening went on. And we went in, I think it's into somewhere else, and in the centre of the city, where we spent that night. And I remember getting in there a bit later, when cheerful young German Jew called Corporal Marx, who was part of headquarters. And Corporal Marx was our interrogator of German prisoners, which he was most gossip with them. Very rough, sort of fresh-faced youth. He came rushing up to me when I just arrived there, and he said, "Oh, Captain Axon shot himself." Captain Axon, Harry Axon, was the intelligence officer. And so, and they'd been on some errand in a scout car together with a Tommy gun in between them, which had gone off. And so the first time I saw Harry Axon after the war, I said, I regaled this incident to him. So he said that, did he? He shot me, he said. Fiddling around with his Tommy gun. And Harry actually got even rather nasty wound in the thigh, as far as I remember. Anyway, that was the last resort. He had to be evacuated. But it was a fairly chaotic night. Was awful, and we hadn't got much in the way of infantry with us. I suppose the Herefords, but it wasn't a job for tanks to be and try to occupy and do immediate control of a place like Lübeck. And so the next day, I think it was the 43rd Division, the Wessex Division, came in and took over from us, and we were moved out. Back west of the city.
That would be to Monkshagen.
Yes, that's right. And we were there, I think, when we heard that a peace had been declared.
Do you remember any particular celebrations on VE Day?
Got drunk.
What sort of pub?
Very unsuitable liquor. I don't know much else.
Where did you get the boot?
I think I did my drinking with the squadron. I went back and joined them, and so they produced this terrible liqueur. drinking. We were very disappointed then, because it was about them.
Hang on, how did you feel about the end of the war? I mean, were you pleased to think it was all over?
No, and it was a sense, there's a distinct sense of anticlimax, because we had assumed that our next role, we aren't necessarily anticipating the end of the war, but our next role would be to go up and liberate Denmark. And that was a clearly obvious thing for us to do. Instead, Second Army sent the Household Cavalry with armoured cars up there to do the job immediately. And we were left to provide the occupation of the province of Schleswig-Holstein and to supervise the movement of the German army from Denmark, and I suppose also from Norway, travelling back through Schleswig-Holstein into Germany for dispersal.
How did you do that? Supervise the move?
Well, we just had... They came on foot through, and it was a sort of continuing process for several months. We didn't really have very much to do. I think we maybe had to provide places where they spent the nights and that sort of thing on the way through. But this was going on, and I don't think that we as a regiment had much to do directly with this movement control. And as far as I can recall, it went on quite smoothly. But the other thing we had to do was to look after, be responsible for some large camps of what they call displaced persons. And they were a mixture of anything from Eastern Europe. I suppose, poor souls, when they were returned to Russia, may well have had a very sticky response.
How did you actually supervise the displaced persons?
Well, we played entertainment, we played football against them, helped to provide them. They were with a bit of entertainment. They were a miscellaneous, ill-disciplined, rather tiresome lot.
Was there any trouble with them? Because some of them...
Only of a minor nature. Another stupid incident. An old lady, one of the displaced persons, who found she'd killed a sheep. The farmer complained about this. And one of her colleagues said, she was attacked by this sheep, which trampled on her umbrella. She had to do it in self-defense. But they went eventually during the summer.
Now you were
repatriated.
You sent large numbers of drafts to the first,
yes,
and to other units as well.
Yes.
And the first were intended to be off to Japan, so to speak, far east anyway.
Yes.
What was all that about?
That was during the summer, and comparatively soon after we finished up at a little town called Bridgestead, not very far south of the Danish frontier, and on the west, towards the west coast. in villages around there. Again, still on squadron messes, and regiment headquarters had a separate mess in a villa.
Okay. Sticking to this point about the Far East and the first.
Yes.
And how did people feel?
I forget at what age group it was worked out, but those who were not due for early release, all the younger or more recently joined members of the regiment, were drafted into the 1st Regiment, and they in turn sent us their people who, like the remainder of us, were due for early release. And the idea being that having achieved this, the second fighting corps would be in due course disbanded. And then on top of that, sometime during the summer, Colonel Scott was given an appointment, some regiment. It may have been his own regiment, I don't know, the Inniskillen Dragoons. I don't know, but he was a regular soldier. So he left the regiment. And so, for a few months, I was, I think, paid as a acting lieutenant colonel, which is very reasonable in the circumstances. I didn't have very much to do. Our principal occupation then was keeping people entertained. Because they were just waiting for release and waiting to get home.
How did you do that then?
Well, we started classes on everything that we could instruct in that might be interest or use to them. Sporting events, lots of football. I think we are moderately successful. And then from time to time, the people will be discharged all through that autumn. And the adjutant of that time, at the end of the war, a man called Philip Noakes, he and I went down to, motored down to Brussels to get instructions about how to wind the regiment up. And then came back and did that. And I actually left before him. We all left when our turn came up. And I myself left Bridgestone to be discharged from the army sometime in January 46.
Now, what about, how did you wind down the unit?
Well, it was a sort of steady process, I think, as people were being discharged. And depending on the everyone was classified in a class which took relation to A, age, and B, length of service. And then, over and above that, some people had priority for one reason or another for early release, and that could override their age service class, so to speak. But this was a continuing process going on throughout that, so the regiment was getting ever smaller.
Now, what about the ban on fraternisation? No with the Germans. Were you aware? How successfully was that implemented?
I think we were fairly successful. I was guilty of fraternising to one extent. I was rather keen on shooting, and I discovered that on the west coast of Schleswig-Holstein, the west coast of Jutland, there was marvellous wild firing in the autumn. I found a man who was a farmer called Herr Peterson. And Herr Peterson was a farmer come fisherman, come wild fowler. And so he was just the a man to tell us about the methods of wildfire, which are special to that district because of the nature of that. I won't go into detail, but he was very helpful. And to some extent, this is governed when we used to go out by the moon and the state of the tide in relation to the moon. But if there was strong onshore winds, then everything was put forward. And sometimes Peterson come on the office, on the telephone, and say, "It's just a Herr Major," you see, and so I would say, "Yes." And he said, "You must come immediately." I said, "Oh, but you know, it won't be high tide for about 2 hours yet." "No, it doesn't matter," he said, "you must come immediately. There's a strong onshore wind. And there's so many duck going up and down the coast." And so off we set. And Philip Noakes and I used to do this more than any other, and there were others too. We had great fun, and the viler the weather, the better it was, and more often than not, we came back actually soaked to the skin, because it's very exposed to west wind, of course, that North Sea coast and Jutland.
And what about...
But I think, generally speaking, there wasn't much fraternisation. But I did, once or twice, go into the Paterson household after shooting when I was up there. And that's where I was introduced to smoked eel, which is a great delicacy on that Dutch and German coast.
What about the men? Did they fraternise much?
I don't think so, but they may have done.
What about the black market? Were you aware of that, or people's involvement in it?
No. I think we didn't indulge in it, but we didn't need to. I mean, we were well supplied with rations and so on. I mean, the black market existed. People didn't probably wouldn't have survived without it. I think one tended to, as far as the Germans are concerned, to wink one's eye at them and not to notice. But I have no distinct recollection of it being a serious problem. I'm sure it probably was.
Now, what about the demobilisation process for you? That was January 1946.
Yes. Well, I can't remember much about it, but I went back to the Channel, I suppose, and then I sailed across, and I went to some demobilisation place where my papers were dealt with, and where I got a free issue of a civilian suit, which didn't fit particularly well, and a coat, and a hat, and a shirt, and a pair of shoes. Then I was sent home. Just as simple as that. It was in January.
And what were you going to do for your post, you know, your career?
Well,
you'd been at university before the war.
I'd been at university before the war. My elder brother, who had been in the family business, which was based in Fife, a place called Concordia, he was in the TA of the Black Watch. But sadly, he was wounded at Alamein. He was killed in Sicily. And so there was the opportunity of me going into this family business. And so I did so.
And that business was?
And that business was called Robert Hutchison and Company Limited. Still going strong, but it's not owned by the family now. It's still functioning. And I was with them.
What business was it? What was that?
Well, it was concerned with grain, the grain trade and farm milling. And malting and grain and grain processing, and I was learning to about the flour mill, and I was there for about 10 years. I took a fortnight's holiday, I think, after I got home, and then I started work, and I hated it. Well, I stuck it there for about 10 years. And then I was offered for a better job down in London same trade. With a firm called Ranks, which later became Ranks, Holmes and Google. And so I went down and worked for them.
Now, had the war had any effects on you, personally, mentally or physically, would you say? Good or bad? Good or bad?
Physically or mentally?
Physically or mentally, and good or bad?
Physically, no. I'm not aware of any effect. I think it had an unsettling effect mentally, in that I think it was probably more difficult to settle into a job. And I think I had not given sufficient thought to the matter before agreeing to go into the family business, which may well have been a mistake. Looking back, it's not easy to judge that one. Otherwise, well, obviously, 6 years away in the army doing what one was doing did have some effect, an unsettling effect, although it was nice to get home. It was also not easy to sort of reintegrate oneself into the pre-war life. And anyway, it was quite different because the immediate post-war years were years of the most serious rationing and restrictions, and very heavy taxation. And so the opportunities for travel, for instance, and for getting around by car with very severe petrol rationing, food rationing too, that's less important, but it was made it more difficult to go out to a restaurant and so on. It was rather a boring period, you know. Do you remember it? Too young, not born.
What about your contacts with the regiment? Because you
the regiment. It was a contact with individuals, such as it was, but the regiment had been disbanded. But it reformed within 2 years. And so I joined it again.
Now, why did you decide to join again?
Seemed the right thing to do, and I was quite happy to do so.
Now, what was the setup of the regiment when you rejoined it?
Our role had been changed from being a tank regiment to back in armoured cars, which we had been before the war. We had very little equipment, of course, to begin with, John Gilmore commanded, and there were some younger people joined the regiment who had been too young to serve during the war, and there were a certain number of people like myself who had seen service during the war, and the same went for the NCOs and the men.
Now, what sort of training were you doing?
Well, we were learning to use these armoured cars, as though we didn't have very many of them, and to get used to our equipment. It was training was confined to a few drills, and getting the drills established again, and then to a fortnight's camp. Had a sort of bit of a camp, I think, in 48, at a place called Button, which is an army camp east of Dundee, near Carnoustie, somewhere there. A little bit of a camp there. And then we went for our first fortnight's camp the following year to Omagh in Northern Ireland. And there was a cavalry regiment based there in Omagh.